Welcome everyone to the Life Insurance Wealth Management Practice Committee Insight Session. My name is JR Tan and I'm a member of the LIWMPC. Today I'm really excited to introduce our speaker and her topic. Elizabeth Baker is the director at EY. She just moved to EY recently. Prior to that, she was at Comintra as the appointed actuary, whom I have worked with for 2.5 years closely. Liz has over 20 years of experience. She has worked across different countries. I need to check with her, but I think it's Japan, France, Singapore, Asia, Europe, Australia for sure. And she has worked across life insurance, general insurance, and reinsurance companies as well. Throughout her career experience, she has many roles. She has worked in actuarial, finance, risk. She was also the CFO, a board member of several boards. So she not only prepare and draft advice and reports to the management and boards, but she also at the receiving end. She will be today she will be sharing some of her experience and the key tips on how to distill very complex and technical matter like life insurance in written communication skill. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce Liz to the stage.
Hi everybody, thanks Karen. Nice to see a few familiar faces. So I can just have a bit of a show of hands. I'm sorry I can't do it for the webinar, but who's working in life insurance? Reinsurance? Yeah, anybody not working in life insurance? Okay, good, it's a life insurance. We might have a couple of references to some other types of insurance, but let's start with that. So as Jay said, I was an appointed actuary here not long ago, but I also have a finance background, so I was a CFO, I used to work in the AXA Group for a long time, so I have a finance perspective, what finance people like to see in documents, which is different sometimes from what actuarial people like to see in boards. So I've done a lot of things, I've worked in a lot of countries, so today's presentation, it's designed to be practical, so don't focus on the numbers are sort of made up, it's just to illustrate concepts and it's a bit difficult to show you actual documents that I would have produced because they're generally confidential, so I just try to show you the format and some of the sections and some illustrations of how you might apply it. So what we're going to cover today, what I thought we'd cover, and I'll just get, it'll be about, you know, 45, 50 minutes, but if there's something you don't understand, just stop me and we can take questions at the end, but we'll also take questions as we go along. So we're going to cover the context, like it's a good showing, like why are we here today? So hopefully some of the reasons will resonate with yourselves. I've come up with about 8 principles to be practical on how to, you know, write better written communications, because the report of your work, it's the thing that people see about your work. If they don't see all the work, they see the report. So it's what defines you as a subject matter expert, right? So just think about that when you write a report. They don't see all the work you've put into it. They see the finished product, the report, what you're telling them. So that's why it's very important to do the written communication very well. And then some tips about how to apply these principles that I've come up with. Then we're going to show some examples, one for the board, one for pricing, one for the FCR, and just one if somebody asks you for a one-pager, I call it an organisation I used to work for had, they called it a soap. And when I first went there, I thought, what are people talking about? Soap. Huh? It's a statement on a page or a summary on a page. And it's actually a one-pager. It's actually quite a good concept. So if you hear someone talking about soap, that's what that means in some companies. So why are we here? So you're all here because hopefully this will resonate with some of you. So if you're in a company, there's multi-channel distribution channels. There's lots of products, lots of channels in the same company. And in some companies, you're part of a bigger organisation. Your shareholder might be an overseas organisation, might be a bank in Australia. So things are pretty complex. And things just don't happen today and that's the end of it. It's a multi-year impact. So you've got to try to tell people what's happening now and what's going to happen, may happen in the future. You've got lots of risks. And things are interacting. So let's say sales volume and expenses, they interact. If your sales volume goes down and your expenses are fixed, your unit cost will go up. So those two things, they interact. They're not different. You've got many metrics now to think about. You've got profit, you've got capital, now you've got the risk appetite statement, you've got the risk management statement, you've got boundaries, you've got all these things. So they're the sort of, when you present a document to another reader, they want to see everything. They just don't want to see part of it, the profit or the capital or the risk. Generally, they'd like to have the whole view. Then how many of you work in an organisation where someone said, we need this and we need it today? You know, things are becoming really real time. You need to have an answer by close of business today, and maybe it's midday, maybe we're here and we're getting an email right now saying, by the end of close of business today, I need this. And it's who needs it? It's someone senior in your organisation. So we have to get better at telling people, summarising for people, the state of, you know, the state of the nation, I suppose. There's lots of change going on in the industry, and there's lots of change going on in organisations. And when you have to, when you write a report, you have to include that. It's, you have to tell people this is changing and this might change this, not just hope that they work it out for themselves. We've got complex products, lots of risk, and increasingly you have senior management and board members. They don't come from a life insurance background. A lot of them don't come from an insurance background. Right? So you cannot assume knowledge. You have to teach the people. Right? Can't just assume that they know what you're talking about. And just in general, we need more insights in less time, and there's more things to consider. So we need to really focus on improving our report writing. So here are my principles for how to do write things better. So the first one is plan, right? We're going to talk about how to plan, but you need to plan your document and you need to plan the timetable for your document. And that's very important, the timetable for your document. Because one of the things you need to do is you need to get feedback from the key stakeholders. And those people are busy. You cannot just send it to them and expect them by the close of business today to have read your report and given you all their feedback, because they're just not going to happen. So we'll talk about that. So as Jeff said, I've been working for a long time. I'm in a state of continuous improvement. Right? What happens is you need to keep improving your documents. And you need to get feedback from your audience on what was good about your document or somebody else's document, what was not good about it, and you need to continue to update it. So we'll talk about how to do that. And we'll talk about some people, some audience members, they don't like certain words, so don't use those words in your document. If you use them, it's like, oh, this person doesn't really understand the audience. So they like certain words, they don't like certain words, and that's pretty key to making. So, and then the next thing to do is to have your basics covered. You know, is the spelling right? Is the grammar right? So your organisation, it'll have a template. Often there's a template or a format for a board report or a BRC or a pricing report or the FCR. You need to use it, not just make up your own one, right? You can maybe improve it, the current one, but that's pretty important. And the metrics of your organisation. What's important in your organisation? What are the key performance indicators? And we'll talk about finance, and that's what they're interested in. Right? How are they going? How's the company going against the key performance indicators that you... And then there's the key risk indicators as well, but the key performance indicators. Is it revenue? Is it combined ratio? Is it loss ratio? Is it capital? Is it P&L? Those sort of things. Is your document enjoyable to read? Huh? Do people look at it and go, oh, sigh, or what do they say? Oh, this is a really good document, right? And there's ways to make it easy to read. And is it a jargon-free zone? A lot of actuaries use jargon, right? Jargon, right? And you assume a lot of knowledge, so try to make it a jargon-free zone. Is it self-contained? As a board member, there is nothing more annoying than receiving something that refers to this document and this document and this document, which you do not have access to and are not summarised anywhere, because what that means is you cannot read this document. You need to go and get 5 other things to be able to understand your document. So that's pretty important. And it needs to be in the right order, right? So you need to have the key points up the front, not on page 20. And many of you might have seen some senior people, if you give them a big document, they're flicking through it already before you've even started, because you haven't summarised what you're going to talk about at the start. And tailored, is it relevant to and understandable by the audience? And that's quite important, and the audience is different depending on what you're doing. I'm going to show some examples of that. So people talk about insights. This is an insight session. Other people talk about takeaways. You know, what are the key takeaways? Basically, what people want is the 3 or 5 things that they should learn from something. If you read a document and you don't learn anything, it's not very enjoyable to read. And more importantly, it's not actionable. You actually don't know what to do with it, you know. So the reader should know what to do next with it, why to do it, and what time frame they should be doing it. So they're my sort of, there could be more. These are things that have helped me. So let's go through some practical tips for applying those. So plan. So my personal trainer would tell me, if you plan to, you fail to plan, you plan to fail, basically. So what you need to do is, if you've got a month, I'll give you the example. It applies to writing. If you've got a board paper and the board date, where are we today? We're on 9th of June. Let's say the board meeting's on July 9. Generally, your organisation, you'll have had to have the thing ready at least 1 week. It'll be getting sent out by secretariat 1 week before. Okay? So probably 1 week before that, there should be an internal discussion. So basically, you need to have it ready 2 weeks before the due date, not the day of the day it's getting sent in. And if there's going to be anything controversial in it, you need to factor that in as well, so maybe another week before, to sort of educate the key stakeholders about what you're going to put in it, okay? And give them, so you're leading them to not just give it to them, because once it's there, you haven't really consulted with them. People, it's like you like to be consulted. So that's linked to writing. So sometimes people don't receive your report very well. It's because they haven't really understood it, and that's the first time that they see it, and they would have liked to be consulted. So that's very important, like making a timetable and making enough time for drafts and redrafts, and people are busy, and that's just a very key thing. And is there a standard format? We'll get to that if there's no format. And then, are you drafting this for someone else? So some, you know, companies are very senior people don't draft the actual document. They get someone to draft it for them. So if you're writing this for somebody else, you need to go and talk to them about what they want to see in it and what sort of language that they use and what they don't like to use. That's the language. So, or get a document that's been written for them before. So I've just started in a new job and I'm writing things for other people, and it's a learning experience for me because there's new people and I have to see how they like things written. And if you go to 3 different people, there'll be 3 ways that they like to write it, because it comes from them. So that's just something that you need to do. So it's not that they don't like your document, they just, you haven't used the words that they like. Right? It's a pretty simple thing to do to get a better. So that's about planning. So continuous improvement. So basically just talked about improving things, right? So let's say the SDR, we'll get to the SDR. If you're doing the SDR, hopefully there was one last year, so you'll start with that and you'll look at how it can be improved. So, and you need to plan that ahead. So let's say 30 June is now, probably people should have started planning in March what they're going to put in the 30 June, hopefully, document, because there's a lot of work that goes in it. Or is it the first report? So is this pricing report that you're doing, is it the first one of this type? But there's probably another pricing report that you could get that you could start with. And I'm going to show you, we made a template and it worked pretty well. Audience feedback. You know, there's sections, graphs, formats, information that were helpful that people liked, because this is especially important for boards and asset liability committees, that sort of thing, because people like to see things in a certain format, and you show them, you delight the customer, right? You show them a graph and, oh, that's great, you know, and you think, okay, we can use that somewhere else. So get that sort of feedback, because it's reuse and it's cutting down the time that you need to spend on doing your report. And you also need to update anything for what's changed. Has the professional standard, is there a professional standard about this? Has it changed? Has the company template changed? Has the ICAP changed since last year? So if you're talking about management actions or the capital plan, has that changed? Has the risk management strategy changed? That's very important to use the latest and to update that and to say how it's changed. So when you get to a document. So if you've got the basics covered, yeah? So there's spell check, there's grammar check, so you need to put that on. But grammar check, you need to proofread the document. Grammar check does not pick up the difference between lead and lend, for example. I saw that last week. Huh? It will not pick that up. Huh? It doesn't. So you need to read it, because it's not, it's helping you, but it's not finishing it. It's not finishing it for you. Have you documented all the sources of information that you're using? That's what you need to do. This is at this stage, and it comes from this. That's pretty important. And I talked about, are you using the template colours, policies, metrics of your company? So every company has colours and, you know, formats and fonts, and I'm hopefully trying to use the Institute's font here. But you know, that's what you have to do, and that's the sort of, that's what I call the basic. Huh? So in my organisation, we use yellow and grey, and others use blue, and others use, you know, that's really important, because that's what you need to do. So getting on, they're sort of the basic things. Enjoyable to read. Is your document, if you read this, if you picked up somebody's document and you read it for you, would you find it easy to read, and is it full of jargon? So how long is it? Is it too technical? If it's 25 pages long, it's too long. Huh? People are busy. Huh? You need to cut down what you're putting in it. Are there graphs and there charts and there's tables, or there's only words? So you need to put more graphs, charts, tables, and little boxes and short sentences, and that generally makes it easier. Have you explained the key concepts? And this is linked to who's your audience. So you can assume some knowledge depending on who your audience is. But so we'll get to that. Like, you know, let's say loss recognition. If somebody's on marginal services, on a product, some people will know what that is, some people will not know what that is. So if you talk about this product is heading towards loss recognition, some people will have no idea what you are talking about. So you need to, we'll talk about that. This is pretty important. When a reader reads your document, will they be able to explain this to someone else? So this is very important in finance. If you get something for the CFO and that he or she has to explain to the group CFO, they need to explain in 3 or 4 sentences or 5 minutes what the topic is about. And what they're going to do is get your document and try to explain it. So think about that. And is your document a jargon-free zone, right? Would a non-actuary be able to understand it? Yeah? Not everyone's an actuary, right? Are there any questions so far? No?
Yeah. Just on the document side, I mean, some concepts are quite technical and important to capture that information. So are we saying in some instances you need to have 2 documents, the short version, the long version?
Oh, so what you could put in, if you wanted to explain something technical, you could put that in an appendix, right? So you'd have the more the note about X, right? Note about the concept. And you could add that in the document as an appendix. So you refer to, for more explanation about this, please see this one pager that's at the back. You know, as an example, you know, and then if the reader needs really detailed, they'll come and ask you. But the thing is, they won't come and ask you because it just depends who it is, right? They're really busy, you know, they're not going to come and sit, they don't have an hour to come and sit with you to explain, you know, how it all works. So what's really helpful is a one-page note in Appendix A, about what this is, not in the body of your document. You summarise it in the document. What concept are you thinking about?
I guess I'm thinking about sort of projects or, you know, reviews that you've done, and for later on down the track, someone needs to know the details because you've reviewed a certain thing at work, and 3 years down the track, that person has left, that knowledge has gone unless they've actually documented.
Right. Okay. So one of the things is you can document all the relevant. You can, at the back of the document, you could put all the relevant documents in a summary at the back without.
Yep.
That's what I mean about self-contained. You know, you can make a list of them. These are the important documents that it was prepared by X and it was on this date, so that you could reference them without explaining the whole thing again in the document.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's ways to do it. We have to be more disciplined, right? We're not disciplined enough, right? We write long things because we need to tell everybody everything. But the problem is that the people don't have the time to read what we... It's not interesting. They just don't have the time. And the more senior you become in an organisation or in the regular, you just want to know the key things and you just assume the rest of it is correct. Right. self-contained. We talked about self-contained. It's basically it needs to. So, for example, in a pricing advice, if you've given your, let's say you're a reinsurer and you're quoting on a piece of business, and the last two quotes you gave were indicative, that's okay. They didn't need advice of the appointed actuary, but it would be good to summarise what you actually quoted. In the document, at the start, just so people have a bit of the context, rather than thinking this is the first time, yes, this is what you need actuarial advice for, but there's two other quite important things that we gave to the client. That would be an example of where it's self-contained. Where you've got multiple quotes on the same thing, like if it's a tender and you might have round one, round two, round three, you could say, we quoted round one in this date and it's summarised in this document, this, and then these are the things that have changed since then. That's what I mean about self-contained. Because if you can't, because there's the danger if it's not self-contained that people use it in the wrong way. They don't have all the information. And then I talked about summarising the key conclusions, the insights, what you're going to look for in the document at the start, towards the start, maybe on page two. In the executive summary, these are the things we're going to cover, rather than just at the back, because people will try to, then they'll have to read the whole document to work out what's important. Next one's very important, is it tailored to the audience? Is it relevant to and understandable by the audience? Who is the audience? Is it for the board? Is it the BIC, the BAC, the board audit committee? Is it for senior management? Is it for finance? So you need to understand what this document's going to be used for. And is it consistent with other documents on the topic? Yeah. So there's nothing worse when someone gives you this and someone gives you this and it's two different versions of the same, what's supposed to be the same topic. So if you discover that someone's telling someone senior something that's not quite right, you need to address that. Talked about finance. I've got quite a lot of experience with finance. Finance works generally. They work on a principle of no surprises. So they don't want surprise towards the end of the year. They want to be able to manage, so they've got a budget and things are managing to that, so they want to know where it's in the forecast, and so they're just trying to, they don't want a surprise. There's nothing worse than going to a finance director 2 weeks before the close of the year and say, oh, we found this and it's X and it's going to X million and it's negative, and you know, because there's nothing you can do about that in the financial year. So that as a principal, we'll talk about it. And does it have the relevant KPIs? You need to make sure we'll talk about that. Are the variance from the KPIs explained? You know, especially on loss ratio, we'll show an example of how that might help you. So the takeaways, the insights, so this is an insight session. They need to be summarised for the reader. It's helpful to try to get to the root cause of the issue, not just the issue. You know, like if I use a simple example, it links to commentary that finance people like you to write as well. So, you know, the loss ratio went up. Claims went up. So I've seen cases of where someone wrote, yeah, the loss ratio went up because claims went up. That's not very insightful, you know. They want to know which claims went up and why. Was it incidents? Was it termination? Was it whatever it was, right? So, and what are the impacts? Is it on policy liabilities, profit, capital, those sort of things? Some things, when you get to more complex things, they're quite... scenarios are difficult to quantify, so you might use some sensitivities, and that's true in the pricing and certainly in the FCR. Things might be multi-year, and certainly for finance, what you're writing about or what you're discovering might mean that you're not going to meet the budget or the forecast or the plan needs to be changed, and so people need to know that, and so you need to be able to summarise and tell them that. And there's ways to tell finance people, right? If you tell them earlier, they'll be happier. They'll be more accommodating. If you tell them right at the end, it's very difficult for them, especially after somebody's already shown it to perhaps the group CFO. Then your finance people are really locked in that position, so it makes life difficult. And we need to be more commercial. Have you applied the sort of customer lens to it, the commercial lens to it? And lastly, is it actionable? So the reader should know from the document what they should be doing next with it, and they will because you've set out the issues to consider in the next steps. Why they should do it, because you put the key takeaways, insights will have been put in it, and in what time frame, because let's say a board paper, you'll say, I'm going to give an update at this next board or whatever, and so don't expect anything before then. So they're my practical tips and So this is an example of a summary on a page. So this is just the sort of format. So let's say somebody wants to know, by the end of the day, what's the issue about life insurance claims in the industry. This is just an example. So people who work in the industry will know that claims management practices have recently become a key area of focus of insurers following issues in the media. So let's just say someone in your organisation, it's Monday morning and they've read this Saturday's paper or they've seen XYZ television program and they say, what's this about? Because that's what happens, right? People want to know, how's this affecting our company? So one of the industry topics, not linked to, but the main ones is it's insurance risk products. It's not investment products or other right now, it's not, it's just that. So it's, you look in your company and you say, how will that affect us? So one of the things is the use of outdated policy definitions in some products, which may not necessarily reflect contemporary medical practice. And then there's some external reviews going on the sample of past claims right now in companies. So what is that? So in the sort of the left-hand box, you talk about, you show the sort of these are sort of areas. So there's a customer focus, but it's affecting retail, group, risk culture, reinsurance, you know, external reviews. These are just examples, right? So people who are interested, to your point, if they want to know, they'll come and ask you. They'll say, oh, what's this mean? And you'll be able to explain it to them and you won't have to write every document because you don't want to have to write everything all the time. You know, it's much better to have a 5-minute conversation and say, go and read this document about this. So what does it mean for us? So this has got a bit of a finance slant on it, but so let's say a company's got three business lines and two have got insurance products and one's got investment. So A and B have got insurance products and B's got investment products. So it's affecting business line A and B. It's don't worry about C. It's not affecting them right now, right? So then it's this product. It's product 1 and 2 in business line A, and it's product 3 and 4, and let's just focus on those. And you may need to change your best estimate assumptions, but you don't know that yet, right? So that'll pop the question by how much, and you'll say, well, I don't know yet because it's only one day that you've got to do it. You say that you might have to upgrade the policy definitions, and that will... that'll increase the current new budget loss ratio by X percent, or you could put estimated X percent, and that's going to cost X million or Y million, and that's not in the budget. So immediately finance people will know, right, I've got a negative variance. And then the next thing I'll say is, why don't we put the price up, right? But prices lag that, so that's, you're not going to see that pricing revenue increase till at least the next year. And then if you're doing external reviews, they say that this is not a forecast, right? So you've got, we're going to spend this money and that's not there. So if you see, like, this is just an example, but you're trying to target the information to what the audience is actually wanting to see. So let's say for the finance people, you know, what you're going to do next, and just more generally, you're going to look at the new business product definitions, you show the time frame. We're showing the time frame. So we're going to do it by the end of quarter two, and then we're going to update the August forecast, let's say. Like some companies, I don't know about your company, some have three forecasts a year. So you're going to do this. Then you're going to look at the estimates of the... you're going to confirm the estimates that you've made on the budgeted loss ratios. You're going to look at the external claims costs. And then the next thing is the dividend affected. So for companies that are owned by a shareholder where you pay a dividend every 6 months or every quarter, that's another thing. Need to know whether that's going to be impacted by this. So it's quite important to say not affected or going to be reduced or something. Yeah. So that's just how to help you with finance. They just think it's knowing your audience and what they want to see. Are there any questions? So it's just an example, and some companies may have a format like this in your company, but it's actually a good way to show people, and it forces us to be more disciplined in what we're going to write down, because you've only got one page on which to write it. Here's another example where there's new tools. There's tools like Tableau and Spotfire that you might have access to that help you do graphs and pretty easily. This is an example where, let's say, someone asks you, what's the trend in new business by channel? This is just an example, but you could apply it to anything. So you show, here's some data. So we use the Plan for Life data, but So you show the trend between 2012 and 2015. You've got five categories. You know, on the here's the current distribution. So you might have what your company looks like versus, or you know, if you're a consultant for the client, you know what the client looks like versus the industry. And you show the growth, and then in the bottom, you're sort of showing the insights, well, what you hope is. So, like, group channels growing more, but that's because companies have been increasing premiums more recently, whereas the others have less growth. So reasons, there might be reasons why there's less growth. So less growth in retail because of the life insurance reforms potentially, so growth is slowing down. So that's the sort of show the insights, show the numbers, show... It's, you can see, hopefully, that's pretty easy to read. If you put that in a document, that's very easy for people, so that they could explain that. Most people could explain that to somebody pretty easily. So, as I say, it's just a format, but it's all about the format and showing the insight. And so what it shows is someone's going to come and ask you, you obviously know about this, you know, what's this, and please give me, to your point, please give me some more information, right? Because they'll conceive from your document that you're a subject matter expert on the topic. So, what will happen is people come at short notice and say, "Can I have this, please? Can you give?" And that you have, you'll see go-to people. I'm sure there's some go-to people here. I know go-to people in the organisation, and people just come to them, right? And if you look at the quality of the document that they produce, it's because it looks like this, something like this, right? You can all do it. It's very easy, and this is how you become a subject matter, in my view, a subject matter expert. Everyone's a subject matter expert, but it's getting our point across to people who don't understand. Huh? Any questions so far? As I say, all these are just examples, and they're designed to help you. So you can design formats, and you will have seen some of these in your organisations, and just. Really work on it because it's really helpful, and this delights the customer. If you're a group CFO and you get something like that, you can explain that, you know. And your CEO asks you, "Oh, it looks like this." Pull out a chart, and great, okay, done. Huh? So here's an example of board reporting. So here's an example I was talking about where you can assume some knowledge because the people are on your board, and you can assume that they've seen. You know, they haven't just started and they know what's going on in the company. So this is an extract of their sort of key insight sections for a board paper, and it looks like with the results of a scenario test. So you might show in a table, I've got business line A, business line B, I've got asset allocations, I've got expenses, so the key items. So what are the business impacts of this scenario? So in business line A, reduction in sales, selective lapses, increased claims, you've got margin, and then in B, you've got margin squeeze on the product in that line because you've got competitive pressures. Here, product ABC is close to loss recognition, and here you can put this, right? You can put this because people will know what this is. So for someone else, you might have to explain how marginal services works and what loss recognition you're using, but here you could assume it. Asset allocations, you've got a higher percentage of growth assets, so if you might need to rebalance the portfolio and you've got unrealised losses, you're going to crystallise them. Then you've got expenses, so this is a general issue in the industry. You've got relatively fixed costs and volumes variable, and so unit costs are going up and down, and generally they're going up, especially for acquisition. So that's going to be difficult to change. You know, management actions are not that effective sometimes, and certainly in the next year. Then you have key risks of the scenario, and then your ICAP will have management actions in it. And like people who did the industry stress test, they'll have had management actions. So it's just explaining what the key risks of the capital positions are. So just very summarised, very high level. So on one page, pretty much the board members know from this scenario, the capital position, a severe market event or a strengthening of assumptions. It's got product ABC is close to loss recognition, so it's got limited capacity to absorb changes. Then you've got something about the assets, and then you've got, reducing their fixed expenses is going to be difficult in the short term. So that's the sort of insight from a big stress. So it really depends. That's the sort of, it's pretty easy to read. You can understand that, hopefully. Don't know what you think, but this is, it works quite well from the, And you sort of adapt. This is the one I'm talking about, adapting. If your board likes this or doesn't like this, or your manager, that's how you change it. So here's LPS. So most people, a lot of people will be doing LPS. So where I used to work, we set up a format, a template of the sections that should be in it, which hopefully addresses, you know, all the professional standards and all the companies. So these were the sections that we had. So if you write, you know, so you set off to write the LPS, keep in mind you've probably already got one, because there should be one that relates to something similar. So you start off with an introduction. So why and when, you know, why you need the LPS. We need LPS because of this, and you need it by when, and it's for this launch of this product at this date, or changes to this product at this date, or for this tender. So that's what you decide. And then you summarise the previous LPSs in that document. So that's like self-contained. You just make reference to them, you summarise them, you say, I had this one on this date, this one on this date. Then the next section is about the background. So what's the recent developments in the product? Have you changed the product? Like, so for profile, how much I've got in for, how much new business I'm writing, like what the profitability actually is right now, what changes I've made, what benefit changes I've made. Setting out in the next section, then the product design. So what are the product design? And you might like to lay out the key features. And this is where you link to risk appetite or risk boundaries. Companies nowadays, you know, have risk appetite about we like this benefit feature, we don't like it, we don't want it, that's out of tolerance. So something that's out of tolerance, it's red, right? So you just put it all in red, and you put amber, and you put green. So you show the benefit, and then you show, you know, view, and you show red, green, or amber, and then it draws the attention that focuses on the ones that are high. Are we willing to accept those as part of the whole product or the whole package? This is pretty effective, this sort of thing. It draws, and it's very easy to read. Then claims experience. So benefit type, you need to use graphs. You need to compare to the current best estimate and assumptions. So you show people what's tracking against what you had before, if you've already got it. If this is something, let's say it's a portfolio of new business, you actually know what the assumption is right now, and you know, you can show what the experience is compared to what you are assuming, and therefore you will see whether you have to increase the price or make changes. Show the key trends and show it by the benefit type. Then the next thing is about the minimum pricing metrics. So most companies should have a minimum pricing metrics that they use. So minimum hurdle rates on profit margin or return on capital or other things. So you put that in, that's it. And then you show, then we need to cover reinsurance. So this is assuming it's a direct writer. Does the policy have reinsurance? And what's the quote for the reinsurance? What are the insurance risk considerations? Are you reinsuring the right thing for your risk appetite? What's the capital impact? And then what are the commercial considerations for reinsurance? So even though financially you might not need it, you might have other considerations and you need to refer to those. So pricing and profitability, you talked about. It's quite important to show the benefit type, not just the total. And that's very important for sensitivities. So you've got death. So now you show terminal illness. You put that in, but some years ago you wouldn't put that in, so talk about evolving. So people just would have put death and TPD and maybe IP. So, you know, income protection nowadays should be short-term and long-term, because it's different risk. It's really different risk. So what you're trying to draw out is the different risks. And if you've got reinsurance, you're trying to show gross and net reinsurance, because the metrics look different. Very importantly, number 9 is the capital. You know, how much capital do you need to do this business, and is it in the plan? And that's very important, especially for the board. You know, if we've got enough capital to underwrite this, to price this. I'm going to see an example of the sensitivities and scenario testing. Then the key risks, again, you know, if you go back to the features, what's red, you know, red, amber, probably the red, if you're still going to go ahead with this and you've got features outside your appetite, you probably need to mention those in the key risks, or disability income. Let's say termination rates getting worse, or economy, or things like that, operational risks that apply. If it's a new product, you know, have you got a system to write this thing on, to administer it on, those sort of things. Then is it in line with the risk appetite statement of the company? And then at the end you summarise well, I used to, the opinion, all the opinions of the appointed actuary. And so it makes it pretty easy. It's also, it's easier, and it's easy when you've got different people in your organisation all doing pricing advice that's going to be signed by the one actuary. It just gives a standard format. It's quite good. So here's an example of sensitivities and how to present things, hopefully. So don't pay attention to the numbers. There's not much science in the numbers, you know. So what you're trying to do is show the sensitivities by benefit type based on the risk, right? So you highlight when the profit and capital metrics are negative or below the minimum hurdle. So in this example, the profit margin is 10% minimum for the company, and the return on capital is 8. So information in the same place, you show the baseline. So the baseline, that would have been section 8, but now we're on section 10. So you basically need to see the baseline financials. You put the best estimates. This is how the profit margin looks. Right? This is how the profit margin looks. So the profit margin, you can see here. So overall, total is 12%, and the return on capital is 10. And by benefit type A and B, you can see that it's sort of different, but overall it's 10. And then you've worked out these key sensitive scenarios based on the risks and all the analysis that you've done coming up to this and the claims. So you look at, you know, increased claims and interest rates down, so that might, you know, you might hazard a guess that that's maybe IP because interest rates down will impact that. So you can see what you're highlighting is when you do it, when you run the financials on these new bases, and this is now gone below your minimum hurdle. Overall it's below your minimum hurdle. This is still okay, but this is below your minimum hurdle. It's not negative, but it's below you. So that might draw your attention, so people will understand that. And here's another scenario, increased claims and new business volume, so this sort of changes. So it's just designed for the reader, because the readers, the ultimate readers of LPS 320s are people who are approving it, and generally, depending on how big it is, that's people from your board or directors. You know, they need to, a lot of them are not actuaries. They need to understand what they're looking at. So this worked pretty well, and it's a way to show if you've got minimum hurdles or negatives, just to highlight what's good, you know, up and down, and use arrows, and just more visual is I found to be pretty good. So the last thing I really want to cover was the FCR. So a lot of you will be involved in writing FCR. So FCR is a pretty long document. I've seen some that are like 150 pages, and you know, there's not a lot of people who can read 150 pages, you need that. But you could also make a summary of it. So we used to work, we called that Volume 1. And basically Volume 1 was everything you needed to know about the company, basically. And it was a good summary of the FCR. And it had these sort of sections in it. So if anybody asked you, or if somebody wanted, if you were the actuary and somebody wanted you to present about the FCR, I just brought along Volume 1. I didn't bring the whole thing. I talked about this and I talked about... And then you could take out sections that were relevant for the audience. So for the board, everything's relevant, right? And for senior management, everything's relevant. But for some people, like, say, business line A or whatever, it's not all relevant. Part of it is, especially so. So we had, in this volume, we had background and scope. So you had the idea of the purpose and who did it and the period covered, the structure of the various volumes that you've done. Then you summarise all the opinions in section 2. So basically, the actuary needs to sign off on distribution of retained profits, apportionments, actuarial investigations, all these things. And there was a section, the second section, right up the front was what the actuary is actually opining on and certifying. Then there was an overview of what the conditions. So you've got economic conditions, financial performance, capital, and the key risks. Then you've got the financial conditions, so more detail on the financial performance. So you might have the analysis of profit, you have the the operating profit, the sources of profit, and the return on capital. Then you have the significant events during the year. So first the things that happen in the company, and then, you know, so restructures, management changes, you know. Then you have things that happened by business line and by the channel. So you adapt for your company structure. Yeah, so it's got to be relevant to what's going on in your company, not just general stuff. Makes it more tailored and makes it more relevant. Business performance, so then you would show the business plan, the outlook for the shareholder if you had a shareholder, outlook for the policyholders and the new business, profitability, And then, so that's the first thing. Then you show the distribution of profits. So when you've got par business, the bonus recommendations, then you've got the dividends and the returns on capital. Then a section, quite a detailed section now on risk management, so by various things. Then we added a section about emerging topics, so things that are not about the financial condition right now, but things that are coming up. So let's just say things are affecting, so there's IFRS 4, there's life insurance reforms, there's anything that's also affecting the company. So if you might be doing a, you know, statutory fund reorganisation or partner line or something, you put that down. Then you've got the prior year SCR issues and the progress on those. So that's a requirement standard. We're going to show you how to categorise those, because you need to categorise the progress and the significance amongst all of them. And then you've got the recommendations for next year. And some of you need to categorise by significance, because not everything's just certain things are very important, and other things are just we'll see what I did. And then different time frame, because what I discovered is you recommend all these things and then management can't finish them, right? But management is probably never going to finish it in a year. So you probably should put, you could say, multi-year or first year. So that's the refinement. So I talk about continuous improvement. This is something that I did. So my second SCR for the company, it was changed. Yeah. It was improved. And then we have at the back, there's a checklist, you know. You look at the checklist, you look at PS 200, and then you put sections, right? So it's all there. It's all there in one. It's a pretty good document. So here's an example of categorising for last year's issues. So I borrowed this from somebody else, my colleague who was in General Insurance, and just to give it some share, the board said, oh, that's really good, like that. Like, can you put that in yours? I'm like, okay. So you have to continuously improve and take feedback. So we had these categories that these are made up, but they were okay with our board. So we had the significance of the recommendation, because you look at the recommendations, you know, you don't really know how important they are. So we came up with these categories, so critical, significant, important. So critical is immediate threat to the financial condition. Significant is, it's not an immediate threat, but if you don't do anything, you know, it will become material in the future. And then important is, it's not going to pose a threat to the financial condition, but it could be improved towards best practice and reduce the likelihood of any future issues going on. So you put a recommendation and we'll say you put the significance out of these categories against it. And it's pretty easy to understand what the view of the action is about that, and have a discussion about, do you think this is significant or important? And certainly on progress, you know, completed is pretty self-explanatory. Significant progress is you did more than 50% of it and you've got the resources to finish it. And limited progress was it's less than 50% done and currently you don't have the resources to do it. Because right? Anything can be done with resources generally. Right? The question, as you all know, in companies is how to get the resources to finish things. So this is what we here's an example. So you show the company-wide issue, and then you could show like a business unit. So then when you go to explain your SDR to the business unit, you just have to focus on the things that are affecting the business unit. You don't have to worry. You show them the company things plus the business unit. So you put, here's the issue, expense management, so that improved reporting of managing expenses, because a big part of the cost base is, let's say, fixed, and then your volume is varying, so you need to know how your unit costs are varying. So in you know, that might be the previous year we had, it was classified as important, so it's not going to threaten the financial condition if you don't do it, but it's sort of a good thing to do. And they've made significant progress because they put in a new system and expense reporting is much improved. That's just an example. You can see it just helps. Here's the issue, here's the description, and here's how you progress. And here's another one about, you know, product ABC is below minimum hurdles, so you need to basically do something to get the back towards a hurdle. So significant progress in the year and significant the finish. I mean, it's an important thing. So during the year, the product was repriced and a number of product changes have been done. So it's pretty easy, hopefully, to read. It's not technical. It's like, people should understand, hopefully, how that is. So this resonated pretty well with our board. So that's an example. And so you can use this format for Section 11, which is this year's recommendations. So you've got, let's say, the companies that implemented a restructure. So that's, there's a lot of that going on right now in the industry. So major restructure, several units combined, successful implementation. So that's a significant thing, because if you don't get that right, like, it's not critical, but if you don't get that right, that's going to affect the financial condition somewhere down the track, potentially the company. So you put in, you know, you've got rationalisation of products, alignment of claims and asset allocation, and these actions are in the business plan or the strategic plan or implementation plan. So you say that's very significant, should be able to do it in this year's time frame, so it's not a multi-year, and management should ensure that those business plans are actually done. So as I say, this sort of, it's just an example, but it's sort of, it's a way to just explain recommendations to people who are, and the call to action. So you can see what needs to be done. It's in the business plan and needs to be done. So I think that was all I was going to cover today. So just in a summary, we looked at, I shared with you a few key principles that have helped me. So you need to plan ahead. You need to continuously improve, and the same goes for me. You need the basics covered, like spelling, grammar, have you got your format right, have you got the colours right, have you got the all those things. Have you got the latest met things? Is it enjoyable to read? You know, is it short? Has it got graphs? Is it not too technical? Is it not too much jargon? If you read it, if you picked it up and read it, something about, let's say, I don't know what, about banking, would you be happy? Would you understand it? You use that sort of test. Is it self-contained? Is everything there? Basically, is everything in the document? And when you look at it, is everything there that you really need to know, or maybe an appendix? Or is it tailored for your audience? Has it got the takeaways, the insights? Everybody talks about the insights. Actually, they want the key takeaways. But, you know, the three things, if they had to explain it to someone, they'd be able to explain it. Three or five things. That's all they're looking for. That's what they are. But, you know, use words like insights and takeaways and key messages, those sort of things, depending on your organisation. And is it actionable? Because you just need to know what to do with it. Gave some tips, and we just looked at a few examples, which, as I say, are only examples that have worked for me. And hopefully you'll find it helpful. So happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Liz. What a great presentation. All the key principles definitely resonate with it, with the many versions we have written together. So I'll open the floor now for questions. If you can raise your hand so that I can pass you the mic, the session is currently being recorded. For those who are on the webinar, feel free to write your questions and I'll try to pass it on to Liz.
Questions. I'll ask a question. What have I missed in my principles? Has anyone got any other good ideas?
Hi, this is Paul Swinhart. I'm not really going to ask a question, but I'm sure you can comment on this.
Yeah.
I mean, for the benefit of the room, I think it's important that you give reasons for your conclusions.
Yeah.
So that somebody else can believe them. It's very irritating to have someone asserting an answer without giving you the logic that has led them to that answer.
In your report?
In your report,
yes.
So, I believe that isn't a helpful
statement.
This is the evidence, and So people are looking for sort of the scientific approach.
So evidence-based, these days, evidence-based. So, for this reason number one, two, three, here's the table, here's the evidence, and therefore I believe this. As you say, if you skip the first two bits, so just have the last bit, I would add that, Sort of evidence, things need to be a lot more evidence-based now. You need to support your conclusions.
Is that the point? Yes, that's right. I'll be
sure.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen any two-page soaps?
Oh, yeah. It's sort of just a double-sided thing, I've seen those. Like, when I worked at AXA, they had these quarterly management meetings, and they were held in Paris. And so basically the management of these companies out in, let's say, Asia or Japan, they could go there with they could go with three pages basically to explain the quarterly performance of their business. So they'd have one page that sort of had, it had, you know, the sort of key financials squashed in a tiny little box, and then they had commentary and a few things on the bottom, and then they would have like maybe like two or three pages apart from that. So like, so yes, I've seen that, or double-sided, or, but it's basically forcing you to have a summary and trying to have people, they've got the one pager. You'll hopefully see it in your own organisation. They want the one pager to go and show someone, right? Like, they just put it in their file and they've got it, and oh, I've been asked the question and I've pulled this out and this is really great. And when you provide something like that to someone, it delights the customer, right? Because they know, they look very knowledgeable in front of the even more senior person who is asking them. Is my experience. If you wonder why it works, that's why it works. It works around the world. It works around the world. It doesn't just work in Australia. It works around the world. Because just somebody needs, you want to know, you know. What else? Do you find, hopefully you find it helpful? Do you see yourselves in these situations at your company? Have you planned enough? You know, have you? When someone's too busy, right, it's because they don't know it's coming, this big report, right? And if you had to ask them at the start what they really wanted to see in it, and do your due diligence, you know, little, that's an overused word, but going up, you know, it's just really hot button words that some people just don't like. So, you know, a common phrase at the moment is we're on the journey, and I know someone very senior who just can't stand this phrase, right? Don't want to say on the journey, right? So don't put we're on the journey or talk about the journey or... That's just an example. Right? Like there's, and when you work in consulting, there's words like assurance that means something. Right? So you can't assessment and review and all these words have meaning, and you can't just use them loosely. And there's other things that you know things have that have meaning that you might use unintentionally, and people will cross it out. Some people have read and they put red all over it, and they made it intentionally because you know, you learn. You just learn. Yeah, so Paul added the evidence-based. There's a big push to that now. Want to see the evidence, want to see. But again, you can't have three pages of evidence. You need to summarise your evidence. These points. From this graph, I can see this trend, and therefore I can't see a trend, or I see a trend, and so I've allowed for it, or I haven't allowed for it. And that's in my judgment. But if you don't see the graph and don't see any trend, and just see we've allowed for a worsening, people are not that convinced that you should have allowed for a worsening necessarily or an improvement.
Lisa, I have a question.
Yes, you.
So I think in your earlier slides, you probably mentioned one of the key things that are happening in the industry now in the market.
Yeah.
So about time pressure.
Yeah.
So more insights, less time with more to consider.
Yeah.
It's very conflicting. How do you manage those two things?
So I think you need to reuse, I mean, one of the themes of my presentation is reuse the things that are good, right? Like, so go and, if someone asks you for something and it's got to be done, get something that you know that was generally well received, like a format or whatever, and go and get that and go and adapt it, right? That, I think that's what you have to do. And we have a tendency to perfectionist, right? So, you know, get the last detail and, you know, that holds us up, I think. We have to make estimates and say that we've made estimates and that it's this range and we've used this data and we don't have this. So I think that's one of the things that we need to... People spend too long on... When the format is already beautiful, you don't need to spend the weekend fixing it. Huh? That won't add. It's the 80-20 rule, right? Like, but certain things are basics, right? Spelling and grammar. But the way you write it, whether you use this word or that word, unless it's a hot-button word, won't really add a lot to the document. I've seen people work all weekend to fix a format, which I thought was already beautiful, right? There's not so I think there's a bit of a... There's a lot of actually about a perfectionist thing, right? I have to move away a little bit from that. Look, quality, you know, there's quality, but there's perfection. There's high quality and there's perfection. I think we need to produce high quality, and the quality needs to be in the insight that we bring, because we are specialists of that, and we probably only us can bring it. The danger is, if you delight the customer, they will come back to you, right? So be prepared, right? When you produce really good information and reports, the bar just gets lifted and people come to you. But that's a good place to be. It's a good place to be. That's the danger. So you need to make sure everybody's producing the quality. Yep.
Why is it?
Why is it? I find consultants like to use double negatives, like not unreasonable.
I don't know. Paul's been a consultant for longer than I have. Not unreasonable.
Paul, do you want to?
Yeah.
Liz said that there are certain keywords as a consultant, and assurance is one. So assurance to a consultant means something that is reasonable. There's negative assurance, which is not unreasonable. And there are accounting standards that define all of those things.
Yeah.
And Liz and I both work in accounting firms, albeit as actuaries.
Yeah.
As a partner, I have to be a member of the Institute of Chartered Accountants, whether I like it or not. And therefore, I have to follow their definitions of what assurance means and what not unreasonable means. So it has a language that, if it ends up in court, has a particular meaning.
Yeah.
In practice, it's reasonable, it means we've done a crack of load of work. Not unreasonable means we've done slightly less work and just something that you haven't told us about, we're entitled to admit it.
It's no comment on the work that...
I'm not providing legal advice on
it. It's no comment on the work that you've done. It's more the framework that the people will use. And so when you make a transition from a corporate to a consulting, you're on the learning curve, right? You're on the learning curve, right? Because, when you're in a company, basically you know your audience and the various people and you know how it works. And whereas when you're providing advice as a consultant, it's just different. Different standards, so the language changes. Yes.
Oh, it's Ian here. Just a quick question on if you're about to start a report that you've never written before. So most of the time in your corporates you have FCR, so you have a previous FCR, you can go and put all out an update.
Yeah.
Or in a situation where you have to write a report from scratch,
right.
What are the tips?
So first, what sort of report is it? So who's the audience? Is it for the board? So let's say it's a board report and you're writing it from scratch, right? So there's a format, right? So there'll be a format, right? So you have a format. It's not the first board report that's ever written about anything, right? So you'll go and get you'll go and talk to someone and say, where's the latest board report that's on a topic that looks like that, right? Just to see so you're not starting from a blank page, right? You've got the format, you've seen the paper, you've seen the words, you've seen the way it's set out. Then you can adapt it, yeah? So I think don't start with... And then you can go and talk to people. Is this the last one? Or what else was like this? And more senior people say, oh, there was this, and there was this feedback at this meeting, right? Which are not... That you won't get in the minutes. Minutes of board meetings are very formal, right? Records formal things. But people will share with you, XYZ said that about it, or didn't like that graph, or that won't be recorded in board minutes, Mr. X didn't like this graph over here. It won't be, but people will tell you, right? So you can get. It's about knowing your audience, I think. Another thing, plan ahead. If you're doing something that's brand new, you need to allow more time, more stakeholder engagement, more feedback, more, because it'll be the first time they see it, and there'll be formats that they don't like and graphs that they don't like, and they'll want to prepare things in a different way, and that's just normal. So just allow more time is another tip. And the more senior people that you need to consult with, and engage a lot of stakeholders, right? It's okay to have to change something before it goes to a board. It's a much better position to be in, changing it, than it gets a strong discussion at a board meeting, right? Is my experience. And so on FCR, we had a workshop. We'd have a draft, right? We had a workshop. We talked about we're going to put this in it. And then you get that feedback back before you've actually sent the report, which is, if that helps at all. So that plan, you can't do that with a one-pager, but people have less issue with a one-pager Things are about one page, you have to put caveats on it. If you don't have all the information, just say that, you know, this will be updated, this is on the information at this day, and this might be changing. Does it help you with your question? Yeah.
Liz, we have a question from the webinar.
Yeah.
You talk about enjoyable to read.
Yeah.
Is it true SOPs also need to be attractive? Example, color, shape, shade, choice, for senior management to read it. Is the time really worth spending doing that?
On a soap?
On a soap.
Yeah, I think so. And see, it's pretty easy because your company will have the colours and everything, right? So colours and all of that, that's just... And you get a format and just try it. You know, even if you try it in your department amongst... If your company doesn't have it, you just try it. Try it in your... Just try it with your... And then try it with your, you know, let's say the finance people. It works really well with finance people who are not actually... Just try it. It's just explaining them and doing the discipline. This is what's going on. So, for example, if we were in general insurance, there was a big storm on the weekend, someone's going to want to know how's that affecting our... If you're in a general insurance company right now, even Monday, they'll be saying how many claims we're going to get from this and what's the position and what's the capital and what's this and what's the forecast. And there's an example where that people would have to have by close of business, if not lunchtime, the situation, what it is. And they'll be just updating it every day. And that's how we add value, you know, we add value. Because we'll be the subject matter experts in. It's a bit less real time for us, but when you're helping the finance people, that's... So I would say just try it. For people who've done this, it's actually quite useful. But you have to have discipline because there's only one page, right? So you have to be disciplined because you can't write that much and resist the temptation to make the font like 6 or 4 or something, because I'm tiny and, you know, it's not the one page you're taking into an exam, right? It's you just trying to... You know, I mean, I'm not very good at PowerPoint and I admit it, you know, but you can sort of see the idea. You just sort of basically, this is the industry issue, this is what's for us and this is what I'm going to do next and these are sort of things, and it's really helpful for people. You know, you might have to explain income protection on a page, right? You know, why are companies making losses from income protection, right? Might be the question. From let's say, a finance person, they want to know. So what's income protection? They don't know what the product is, right? Don't assume they know what the product is. So income protection, and it's short-term, is it long-term? Is it, you know, there's incidence rates, there's how many people going on claim and for how long they stay on claim and what's the size of the claim. And really basic like that.
Anyone else have questions?
Just quickly, sometimes when you have to summarise a lot of information into a high level, you then sort of have a risk that people can take that and use it in a way that maybe wasn't intended if they're missing nuances that you've had to sort of summarise out. Do you have any advice for kind of protecting against that risk without putting disclaimers into your reports around, you know?
Is this in your organisation? Yeah, so people go and take it and put it in something else and use it out of context? That happens, you know. It happens less when they will come and ask you before, because they'll come and ask you. It'll happen at the start. It'll happen less because they'll come and ask you, I'm going to show this to X, is it okay? Right, I'm going to use this. Well, instead of just copy and pasting it. You need to know where you actually need to know the ultimate purpose of what they need it for, right? So sometimes you see in organisations, you know, the CEO has asked the general manager of the division, and the general manager of the division has asked somebody and they've asked you, right? So you basically need to know who's going to use it, what they want it for, and then you can always say this is designed for this purpose, right? You need to contain it. That's sort of the business way, and it'll be more contained. Finance, they just have the general, you know, if they're putting together a pack of a division and they're taking different things and they'll cut and paste it and put it out of context, that happens. But you just need to build a better relationship with them and say, if you want to change that, or we'll provide you the numbers and we'll provide you this section, so if you want to change that section, please come and ask us. So to resist the temptation of the cut and paste. That happens, and that's happened to me. And that's, you wouldn't probably do it. You wouldn't do that. But that's, you wouldn't cut and paste somebody else's improvement. But a lot of people do it, and it's totally out of context. And you'll know what I'm talking about. I mean, it's happened to me. So that's, you know, just know what it's going to use it for.
Any final questions?
Very good. Well, thanks everybody for coming. I hope you find it helpful.
Yeah, let's give another round for Paul Stewie. Thank you for coming and thank you for listening. Hope to see you at the next session. See you.